You are listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM. So we got up as far as the Scariff marches, didn't we, on the 16th of November.
Exactly. Right. Now, the next thing happened, the Scariff Masters, right? It's quite a lot of things of interest, right?
Yes.
Now, on the 17th of November 1920, there was an RIC sergeant shot in Cork by the name of James O'Donoghue.
Okay.
Now, he was from Cahersaveen, County Kerry. And he was stationed in Tucky Street RIC station. Now, in response to that, a black and tan or an RIC death squad was loose, and they shot a number of men in retaliation. Now, I hate to use this term, the black and tans, because black and tans are a very convenient scapegoat.
It's a blanket term, which, let's face it, doesn't refer to everybody who was involved in atrocities.
Yeah. You see, they're all members of the RIC. There are supposed to be RIC officers in charge.
Yes.
Right? Whether they connive or in charge remains to be seen, but they're definitely, they're RIC men.
Yes.
This thing of, as I say, our friend, Jim O'Hurley.
Jim O'Hurley,
yeah. Black and tans are RIC men. Now, they are different to the auxiliaries. The auxiliaries are kind of a separate section of the RIC,
yes.
And they wouldn't be reporting to RIC officers. But what are called black and tans? Now, a black and tan to me is an RIC man recruited in England.
And they're still the same force, and they're still
still the same force, they're still the same officers, but they're a very convenient scapegoat. It's like, you know, where you dump all your rubbish.
Yes.
That's what the black and tans are. They are the problems from the RIC are dumped on the black and tans.
Yeah, we like to describe the RIC as the police and the black and tans as the ones who committed the atrocities, but they're the same force. They're the same force.
Yes, they're the same force. Yeah. Same officers, same pay. Now, this thing gave you about 10 shillings a day. That was for temporary ones. They were hired towards the end. But as such, the vast majority, 80% of what were termed black and tans, in other words, men recruited in England.
Yes.
They were paid the same wages, same terms as the regular RIC.
Yes.
No. But as I say, they're a convenient scapegoat for people like Jim O'Hurley.
Well, when it comes down to kind of historical nitpicking like that, you'd have to wonder why you would be doing it, wouldn't you?
It would, because you're hiding. You're hiding.
Yes.
There was two RIC officers in Limerick, right? Both from the west of Ireland, one from County Roscommon, the other from County Mayo. James Horden and John Greeley. Now, John Greeley was a totally honourable, decent man.
Yes.
And James Horden was the total opposite. And they were both from, dare I say, a short distance from each other. One was in Mayo, the other was Roscommon.
And both coming under the terms RIC, both falling into the bracket that Jim O'Hurley would have us commemorate.
They didn't even fall in as black and tans.
Nope, they were our own.
Horden was the worst rich in Limerick. And he was not a black and tan. He had actually been a teacher, a second teacher, I think, in Cork.
Yes.
Before he joined up.
We met with Horan before, and our abiding question was, why would he give up a career as a teacher, a pensionable career, to take a much lower waged job as an RIC officer during a war? You'd have to wonder.
Very, very hard to know, right? Very hard to know. Now, anyhow, we're going to, as I say, a number of men were shot dead in Cork in retaliation for the shooting of Sergeant O'Donoghue.
Sure.
Moving on to the 19th of November, right? A man called Pat was killed at Drangan in County Tipperary. He was an IRA man. Now, what's interesting about Clancy is that it was his brother who was the officer, Free State officer in charge of the patrol that may have killed Liam Lynch.
Right. Okay.
Now, in sense that they were firing from such a long range, they couldn't know who they were firing at.
Yes.
Very similar to the shooting of Michael Collins by Kirkman. Can't think of his name now at the moment, doesn't come to me.
Oh, Sonny O'Neill.
Sonny O'Neill, yeah.
Yes.
Now, Sonny O'Neill was firing. Is that from you? Sonny O'Neill was firing from such a distance, right?
Yes.
He couldn't have known who he was.
He was just taking pot shots the direction.
He was a crack shot.
Yeah.
He was a Sonny O'Neill was a musketry instructor.
Yeah.
You know.
But you couldn't, from the distance, you couldn't have known who. You were just firing at a person, the shape of a person.
More than Clancy's patrol firing on Liam Lynch.
Yes.
You know.
You were firing with intent rather than accuracy. Like you didn't know who was who. Yeah.
Now, it's ironic that the two men died in kind of similar circumstances.
Yes.
You know, that it is ironic. Liam Lynch is a man I have great respect for, because I'll tell you, Liam Lynch, more than anyone, tried to head off the Civil War. And it could be argued that he tried so hard to head off the Civil War that he actually lost the opportunity to win it.
Yes.
That if he had started the Civil War when it could have broken out in Limerick in March 1922, the Republicans were in a much stronger position than the Free State.
Yes.
So if it had broken out at that stage...
But I suppose, you know, rather than thinking of it as, I suppose, a tactical failure, he just didn't want to stop fighting.
Liam Lynch was a very honourable, decent man. Mm. A bit too honest, so high-minded that he was nearly too good for this world. He tried might and main to avoid civil war.
It was a matter of principle over practicality, really.
Yes, yeah. And other lesser men were trying to rush into the Civil War. And a lot of the lesser men, when it got too hot for them later, they were looking for a way out.
Yeah, you see, it's very easy to start a war and not very easy to stop it.
Yes,
and we know that.
It'll run its course, yeah. Unfortunately. Anyhow, on the Clancy was killed on the 19th of November 1921, or 1920, okay? In Drangan, right?
Yes.
Now, the following day, which I think was a Saturday, two men from Limerick, Michael Blake and James O'Neill. Now, Blake and O'Neill had been charged with the shooting of Constable Walter Oakley in Henry Street, Limerick, in July 1920.
Sure.
Neither man had hand act or part in the shooting. Neither man was a member of the IRA. They were both ex-British soldiers. But for some reason, the chief inspector, the county inspector in Limerick, Patrick Marnon, got a bee in his bonnet that the two boys had done it.
Right.
And right or wrong, he was going to nail them.
He was pinning it on them anyway.
They were picked up and charged. They were taken to Dublin. And the British Military Court of Inquiry, or a British court, right?
Yes.
Court martial. Exactly, a good men. Right? They came back to Limerick Junction. Now, the trains to Limerick wasn't running. they were running from Dublin to Cork, right? But the railway men in Limerick were on strike and the trains were off from Limerick to Limerick Junction.
Okay.
So O'Neill and Blake, O'Neill got on the bus. There was a bus running from Limerick Junction to Limerick. He got on the bus with his sister. Blake got a taxi. Blake's got a taxi from Limerick Junction to take them to Limerick. At the cross of Grange. Now, you don't know where the Castle Grange is. It's about 7 miles out from Limerick. It's the turn off of Cappamore.
Right.
Off the main Limerick Prairie Road. It's the turn off of Cappamore. The taxi was there first, and the taxi was stopped by a group of British agents. Now, they were all military.
Yes.
And they walked up, one of them walked up to the taxi, and they shot Michael Day. Now, they intended, the bullet was intended for his brother, but the Blakes had stopped on the way from the junction, and they had swapped seats because Patrick Blake was feeling cold.
Oh, there isn't that the hand of fate, if anything.
The hand of fate, right?
Yeah.
Now, as I say, the death squad had observed the seating arrangements at Limerick Junction.
Yes, yes, yes.
And when they stopped the taxi at Castle Grange, one of them just walked up to the car, right? Shot the man
in the seat. Yeah.
Who happened to be Michael Blake, not Patrick Blake.
Not Patrick.
Then they told him drive on.
Yes.
Right? So they were waiting for the bus. They knew that O'Neill was on the bus.
Right.
There was a bus. And sure enough, a couple of minutes later, they stopped the bus. And they called O'Neill, and he knew what was up.
Of course.
Now, his sister was with him, right? And he didn't want his sister to see it. So he was taken up the road towards Cappamore.
Right.
About 50 yards up from the cross. They tied a, what's called, around his head and shot him.
Right.
Both men, as I say, had been cleared of...
Cleared of all charges, yeah. And they were shot anyway.
They were not members of the IRA. But that didn't matter. I mean, Bannon, I wonder, did he ever reflect on it afterwards? You know? As I say, he was unusual in that he was a Catholic county inspector.
Yes. That would be very, very unusual, wouldn't it?
Well, it was unusual, but it became more prevalent. Like the man that succeeded him, Captain John M. Regan, was also a Catholic.
Right. You know? So there was a shift happening.
Yeah. As I said, the Catholics had... Dare I say, had not written for very high rank in the RSC before that, but at that stage, you know, they some of them did.
Yes.
You know. Anyhow, moving on the 21st of November 1920, you know what that was?
21st of November, Bloody Sunday?
Yeah. Bloody Sunday, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, there was quite a number of men shot that day. I think about 12. Now, most of them are intelligence agents, but not all.
Yes.
Probably the most tragic one was Peter Fitzgerald. Right? Now, Fitzgerald was a Patrick Fitzgerald. John Fitzgerald, actually. John Fitzgerald was Capa White.
Okay.
His father was the... medical doctor in Capa White. He had gone to school in Blackrock. And now, what is not commonly admitted today is that all those Catholic private schools had British Army officer course.
Right.
Right? And it was very easy for a lad that went to school, into one of those schools, to be admitted into the British Army as an officer.
Okay.
Now, as I say, I believe Blackrock, Belvedere, all those schools had their, they were denied today. Probably.
But they had a direct line into, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
They won't be too confused about saying it, but they did.
Yes.
And John Fitzgerald, unfortunately. Now, Fitzgerald had been, as I say, an officer in the First World War, and he came back to Ireland, and he became... what was known as the defence of the parish sergeant.
Okay.
Now, there was only about 30 of these men recruited, and their thing was the isolated barracks in kind of isolated areas. they would be put there to organise the defence. Now, there could be an inspector in the barracks.
Right.
Be a head constable. There could be any number of senior RIC officers in the barracks. But if the barracks came under attack, it was the defence of barracks sergeant that took control. He could tell the an inspector, sorry, get your head down, you know, I'll go in and fetch some water from you,
sure.
Whatever. Right? And John Fitzgerald had been based down in County Clare. And he was ambushed.
Right.
And there was they were trying to shoot him. Now he was wounded, or badly injured, right?
Yes.
But he did escape. And it was on foot of those injuries that he was in Dublin attending a specialist. He was staying in Ellsworth Terrace. Now, the IRA had a list of people they were looking for.
Yes.
And one of them was a Captain Fitzpatrick.
Oh.
So unfortunately, Fitzgerald sounds too like Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick, yeah.
But John Fitzgerald, who was not a target, right, on this occasion, paid for the mistake with his life. Now, as I said, the same morning, quite a number of British intelligence agents were shot.
Yes.
But there were a couple of British officers who were not intelligence agents who got mixed up, being in the wrong place at the right time. You know?
And as we say, back then it was not good to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, neither then nor now.
Not now, yes.
Is it a good thing to be in the wrong place at the right
time?
As I say, I think there's 12 that were killed altogether. Now, most of them were definitely the men that were targeted.
The Cairo gang, yeah.
Some of them might be Collins.
Yeah.
Right? And whilst it was ruthless, it was by and large very, very, very effective.
Yes.
It caused consternation with the British intelligence agents around the city. Those that escaped that morning, they took flight from their...
Oh, I would say they took flight very quickly.
Very quickly into Dublin Castle for security.
Yeah.
It had a major impact on British intelligence.
Oh, you can say what you like of Collins, but he was a tremendous tactician.
I wouldn't say it wasn't against Collins.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things said against Collins by people that's sniping for the sake of it.
But you see, you need to think about the context. Think about the period and the context and the choices that were available to him. Like, he was an extraordinarily efficient tactician.
Yes. I mean, it was very simple. Unfortunately, we're seeing the same in Ukraine today.
And I mean, it was necessary for him to be as ruthless as he was.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the bottom line.
I believe, unfortunately and sadly, it was a case of kill or be killed.
Yeah, it was necessary for him to do what he did. It was necessary for him to be as ruthlessly efficient as he was.
Now, as I said, later that day, the Blackentons and the auxiliaries, or Blackentons, sorry, RIC and auxiliaries, sorry, I contradicted myself, raided Croke Park.
Yes.
And in the course of the raid, they exacted revenge, as I said, on largely innocent people.
Civilians, yes. Yeah.
Civilians. Now, there was one player killed, Michael Hogan. And the irony is that Hogan was a member of the IRA.
Yes.
They didn't know that. Now, his brother, Dan Hogan, was extremely high at the IRA up in Monaghan.
Okay.
And Michael Hogan was cornerback on the Tipperary team, and he was shot
on that day,
There were 14 others, or there was 14 killed in total. There was one man from County Limerick,
yes.
Thomas Hogan. He was from down near Brenna, near the Bowie side. He was he had been in the IRA as well, and he was killed.
But the fact that they were in the IRA was incidental. They were just firing indiscriminately at civilians.
They didn't know that they were
in the IRA. Yeah.
Oh, as you say, that's totally incidental.
Yes.
No, totally incidental. Most of those that were killed, nearly all the people killed there was a 10-year-old boy.
There was a girl
that was due to get married the following week, Jane Boyle.
Oh, just tremendously sad stories. And again, it's just a slice. If you look at the people who were killed on Bloody Sunday, it's a slice of Irish society at the time. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, it's a way of putting it. Now, there was three from Tipperary and one from Limerick.
Yes.
Killed. The most of them were obviously from Dublin, but there was a man called Ryan from Wexford killed. And Ryan had gone to the aid of Michael Hogan.
Right.
Of course, he was picked up by a sniper, you know, that as I say, a soft dog. But that's basically, as I say, the IRA had their day out on Sunday morning.
And the RAC had it in the afternoon.
In the afternoon, yeah.
Yeah.
And in between, now, as I say, some of the British fatalities were not members. They were not targeted. They were mistaken. Now, some of them, three or four of them were kind of a case of mistaken identity.
Yeah.
As you say, wrong place.
Wrong place, wrong time. And the hand of fate just reaching in and plucking them out.
Yeah. As I said, John Fitzgerald was a classic case.
Yes.
Anyhow, as I say, I think we leave it there for today. We're up to the 21st of November.
And we, within one day, we've had an extraordinary amount of fatalities on the 21st of November alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, the month of November 1920, 169 people were killed.
Yes.
That's horrendous.
Horrendous. We, given the size of the country and the size of the population, you know.
Well, it's nearly six people a day.
Six people a day. I mean, just to think in terms of the day-to-day life for ordinary people at the time, though, you know, the newspapers, the stories, just...
The terror.
Yeah, constant fear. Constant fear.
I mean, okay, there was parts of the country where nothing happened.
Yes.
But in the counties where the thing was being fought.
Yes.
Dublin, Cork, Limerick,
Clare. Yeah.
Life was, I hate to think what it was like. Like, most of the people that lived through it, they were very slow to speak about it.
The erosion of community and the erosion of trust, as well as the fear, you know?
Yes.
It's just extraordinary to think about it, like to not be able to trust your neighbour. You know, nobody could trust anybody. Like the erosion of trust and security, as well as the fear of certain violence.
Yeah, as I say, you have bought Thomas Papandreou's book, did you not?
I did.
Right. Now, as I say, you get it very, very clearly in that book. There were at least three people who had given information leading to the capture of the Scarf Martins.
Yes.
At least three. You know?
Yeah.
So it tells you what was going on.
That's within a small community, a small, tight community, you know?
Yeah, tight community. The legacy lingered.
But the legacy still lingers,
Thomas told me about... there was a family out there, and the family were innocent, but they were shunned.
Oh, yes.
You know, what their fathers had done or had not done.
You have been listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM.